Blog Talk Radio.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name, I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did, but I'm living the dream that he kept here. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead till life won't pass me by. Like a north wind whistling down the sky, I've got a song, I've got a song. Like the whippoorwill and the phoebe's cry, I've got a song, I've got a song. And I carry it with me and I sing it loud. If it gets me nowhere, I go there proud. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead till I won't pass me by.
Is Jim Croce, I Got a Name. Hello, I'm your host, Andrew. Thank you all so much again for joining me on this very cold Monday. Not sure where you're at. I'm in South Georgia, about an hour and a half south of Atlanta, and it has been very cold. So I hope wherever you're at, you're warm and you're bundled up. Thank you all so much again for joining me. I do appreciate all of your support, as always. I say it every show. As I mentioned, the last show, took a big break from the show recently. I was off for about a month or two, actually. Had to take care of some things, but things are coming back to normal now. We just recently, last week or a few days ago, we had the Gunkles back on our show, Bill Horn and Scout Masterson, talking about November being National Adoption Month. So it was such a pleasure having them on. They are a great bunch of guys. Check them out, Gunkles Online. That's GUNCLESonline.com. Great bunch of guys, like I said. Before that, we had Ted Williams on our show back in October. If you don't remember him, he was the homeless man on the street, on the side of the street, that had the amazing voice that was captured on videotape. He made national news, and he is doing great for himself now, but we had him on. Please check out our shows, and we've had some great people, so I know you'll enjoy them. We have a great show tonight, everyone, but before I talk about our show tonight, I want to bring on someone that just called into our show just a moment ago. And this gentleman, if you remember, probably about a year ago, he was on with us, and he was our co-host at the time, guest co-host, I should say, because I think think we've had so many of them, it's been hard to keep track. But this gentleman is a really good friend of mine, and it's such a pleasure, such a surprise him calling into this show, Mr. Chuck Tyler. Hey, Chuck.
How's it going, Drew?
Man, it's going great. It's going great. How have you been? And just so everyone knows, I haven't talked to you in probably about almost a year. So tell me what's going on with you.
Nothing much. Just been out and about doing that thing that people in uniform do every day. I came back and I looked up your show again, and I see that you are taking off and are so successful, and I'm really, really pleased that you are being blessed the way you are right now.
Man, thank you. Thank you so much. That really means a lot to me. And, you know, I realize, you know, what I think I saw a few weeks ago or a week ago maybe that you started following me on Twitter. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
I thought you did, and I thought that was you, and I meant to message you when I saw you on there, but it just slipped my mind. And, man, I'm so glad that you're calling in now. So what's presently going on in your life, and are you going to be deployed again by any chance?
No, just walking out the last 8 months, and going to be rejoining the civilian ranks. And I've got a couple of interesting prospects coming up as far as helping veterans get into public office. And so I think when you look at the makeup of this upcoming Congress, and you see that more and more Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are getting into public service and lending their talents, skills, and abilities, you know, not to mention the experience that they've had, the leadership and commanding of individuals coming into Congress, it's just going to be an amazing venture that I'm looking forward to taking part of.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's definitely a new time in our country, and we definitely hope that everything turns out well. Let's just hope and pray that everything goes, you know, God's way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, when we say God bless America, we don't take that phrase lightly.
Right. Absolutely, absolutely. Where are you living at now?
Right now, it's really cold where I am, brother. You're down south. I'm way up north right now. So, yeah, it's really cold. We had snow flurries a couple of days ago.
Wow. Nice.
You haven't had that yet, right?
No, not yet. You know, I thought it was cold down here, but you may have me beat. You may very possibly have me beat.
Gotcha. Looking forward to tonight's show, brother. The late Jim Croce, those are some amazing songs. Cat in the Cradle, I mean, just, you know, move the soul of America when he was producing. And so I look forward to tonight's show.
Yeah, so do I. And I remember one time, and for everyone, we have the late Jim, we have the late wife of Jim Croce on our show, Miss Ingrid Croce. She's coming up very soon in the next few minutes. And, you know, I went into my brother's room one day when we were teenagers, and he was playing Jim Croce on the CD player. And I walked in, I said, "Who was that singing?" And I said, "It's such an amazing voice, such a smooth and powerful voice. Who is that?" And he said, "Jim Croce." And I was like, "Who is that?" Still, you know. But I ended up getting to know him by his music, and he's just an amazing singer and songwriter. Really is.
Definitely. So this should be an amazing show tonight.
It really should. And I apologize to everyone if this sounds like me and him or me and Chuck are on a cell phone right now, just having a normal conversation. But like I said, bud, it's been so long since I've talked to you.
Exactly. And wow, just catching up on old times. I was looking over your website. I saw that you had a few co-hosts. You had, I remember Harley, and lately you had Shayna Mayfield?
Yeah, Shayna Mayfield, right. Wife of NASCAR driver Jeremy Mayfield.
Outstanding. Yeah. And I apologize, Harry Chapin was the singer for Cat in the Cradle. I don't know why that song popped into my head as a Jim Croce song. Sorry about that. No offense to any listeners out there.
No,
had
okay.
Some songs going through my head from that era and misspoke, so I apologize for that.
Believe me, Chuck, if anyone listens to, or whoever listens, I'm not going to say if anyone, but whoever listens to this show, they've heard me mess up so many times, it doesn't even matter. They're probably like, oh, whatever. You know, we're used to it.
Forgiveness is amazing, isn't it?
my listeners have been very forgiving, fortunately. Very forgiving.
Now, I remember a show we had last year, which was an amazing show with one of the cast members of the Ghost Hunters International. Have you ever brought her back?
Chris Williams from Ghost Hunters, right. No, we haven't. I've stayed in touch with her a little bit off and on through email. I've lost contact with her recently, to be honest with you. But I would love to have her back on. She is a great guest, and she was actually doing Ghost Hunters International, I believe, when we had her on the show. And I know she's not doing that anymore. I think that show either is on hiatus or it got canceled. And she has no intentions of going back to the regular Ghost Hunters with Jason and Grant. So I'm not real sure what's going on in her life right now. I haven't really reached out to her lately.
Come on, brother. We've got less than 30 days drill down before the Mayan calendar ends. You should be stacking up shows on the apocalypse and Armageddon and Ragnarok and everybody possible. You should be having some interesting shows coming up.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Let's get together again. And I know that you helped. You actually, I don't know if a lot of people know this. I don't think I mentioned this when you were on with me in the past, but you actually helped get a lot of guests for our show. Speaking of, how many guests did we have on from that award show? Do something about four or five guests, right?
We really did, and if you remember, the Widows Project actually went on to win national awards.
That's amazing.
From that, Do Something, and they have really, really taken off. It is an amazing project, the American Widows Project. It's just wow. So yeah, we've had some interesting and amazing people on the show.
Really have, and let's get together again and work together again if you'd be interested, and I'd love to work with you.
Absolutely, Andrew. You know that's where I am right there.
Right. We're about to play this song by Jim Croce right now. Ingrid will be with us very shortly, Miss Ingrid Croce. This is Jim Croce, one of my favorite songs that he has ever performed. I have to say I love you in a song. Jim Croce.
I know it's kind of late. I hope I didn't wake you, but what I've got to say can't wait. I know you'd understand. Every time I tried to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you in a song. Yeah, I know it's kind of strange. Every time I'm near you, I just run out of things to say. I know you'd understand. Every time I try to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you in a song.
And that is one of my favorite songs by Jim Croce. I have to say I love you in a song, and one of my favorite tracks of his of all time. I absolutely love Jim Croce. And like I was just telling Chuck a minute ago, I walked into my brother's room one day as a teenager, and he was playing Jim Croce's CD, and I was like, who is that? You know, I've never heard of him before. And he told me, and we sat there and listened to it, and I absolutely fell in love with Jim. I don't even know how to explain it. Just such a soft song, just such a gentle voice, and I just love his music. On tonight's show, we have a very special guest joining us. She has such a great story to tell about her life as being the late wife of the amazing singer and songwriter Jim Croce. She has written a book entitled I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story, as well as owns her own restaurant in San Diego called Croce's. It gives me such great pleasure to welcome her to the show today, Mrs. Ingrid Croce. How are you?
I'm terrific, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for joining us. And it is such a pleasure to finally have you on the show, and thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. And now you're in, you live in San Diego, is that correct?
We do. We live in San Diego, and we have a Croce's restaurant and jazz bar down in the Gas Lamp. And we're really, it's been almost 30 years that we've had this restaurant. And actually, the story about the restaurant's pretty neat. When I spent my last weekend with Jim Croce in San Diego, we had just moved here, just about a month, less than a month before he passed away. But we were going downtown on a special date just to be together. We had both been apart for so long because he's been on the road promoting his music. And we went down to the Gas Lamp to downtown to see if we could find some place to eat and listen to some live music. And when we went down there, we looked all over, but there really was nothing in the downtown, which for Jim and me was really surprising because, you know, we had been to a lot of cities and performing music together before Jim did music on his own, and couldn't believe that San Diego didn't have a downtown. So we stopped on the corner of 5th and F, and we looked around, and Jim said, you know, we're just going to have to build ourselves a restaurant and bring our friends in to sing so that we have, you know, a place to go. And Jim passed away the week that we had that date, and about 12 years later, I had opened a small little restaurant in Hillcrest, a little place nearby, and then I found out I had a month-to-month lease, and I lost my lease, and a friend called me and said, you know, you need to come to the downtown. They're going to start to redevelop it, and I said, okay, and I came downtown, and it turned out to be the very same corner where Jim Croce and I had stopped that night, and I thought, this is an omen. I'm going to open this restaurant, and
wow.
I'm going to make this work, you know. And it's been almost a 30-year run that we've been doing this restaurant and jazz bar, live music every single night. So it's become, you know, a tradition in San Diego. A lot of people just come and visit us, and it's a nice way for closure for people to really have the Croce experience, great food, great music, just the way we used to have at our house in the 60s and 70s.
Right. You know, I saw a few years ago that you did have this restaurant when I was actually trying to get you on the show. And you know, I live in Georgia, so, you know, it's all the way, I live all the way over here, all the way across the world almost, it seems like. And, you know, and I was like, oh, my God, I've got to visit this restaurant. And maybe one day I'll be able to get over there. But like I was saying a minute ago, I absolutely love Jim Croce. I love his music, and it would be. I'm going to use the word cool. It would be so cool to be able to experience it, to be able to come to the restaurant. It would be.
Well, if you can, I'd love it. But if you can't, you can always get books or go to our website, because you can learn a whole lot about Jim Croce on our website. So at Croce's.com, you're welcome to come and visit us there. And that in itself is an experience. So.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's a really great website. I've been on the website many times, and that's, like I said, that's Croce's.com. So everyone, please check that out. In 1973, Jim, along with several others, they were killed in a plane crash.
Yes,
can you tell
people killed.
Yes, yeah, six of them. And can you tell us what kind of man was Jim Croce?
Well, he was a charismatic man, very complicated in many ways. He was so intelligent and so incredibly funny. But I think most importantly, he was a terrific storyteller. He was a very generous human being. He loved to please people more than anything. And I think the way he enjoyed pleasing people was performing and trying to make everybody happy.
Mm-hmm. And so I think
was,
he did that.
He was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he did that by his voice, definitely, and you said by his personality. Let me ask you.
Absolutely. His music actually told so many terrific stories, you know, that everybody could relate one way or another. And like you said, I'll have to say I love you in the song. How many times, you know, have people, and both men and women, have trouble saying that those words, I love you. But if you play the song, it says it for you, you know. And that's really, he spoke for us, a lot of us, in, you know, the 60s and 70s, and he's still speaking for us now.
Absolutely. And I don't mean to get off track here, but I've always wanted to ask you, or I always wanted to ask someone that knew Jim about that song that I have to say I love you. Was that song written for you, or was it written anything in his past, or what?
Well, absolutely. It was written for me. We had had... Jim had been on the road for almost 2 years. He was playing 300 concerts a night. And in that particular song, he had invited some people over to the house because it was one of those things where he just couldn't fit enough. He couldn't fit enough into a day, you know. And we used to joke about that. There never seemed to be enough time, you know. So But at the same time, we weren't being paid except for the $200, a $200 a week that we were receiving. So there were probably two things that bugged Jim about me more than anything, and that was, number one, that he didn't like confrontation. He really hated confrontation. And he also, it was really hard for him to come home in some ways because he was so used to being on the road at that point that it was tough. He would call us every night, every single night he'd call and we'd talk, but it was just really, really hard. And so one day when he was coming home, he never bothered to tell me. He just showed up at the door and he said, you know what, I've got a film crew coming to the house today and we need to have dinner for like 30 people.
Wow.
So I said, okay, well, you know, I can do that, but, I mean, we need some money to be able to buy the food and do that. And, you know, he just didn't want to deal with confrontation. And so after all the people came over and we prepared, I made food from the garden and did all kinds of things. And they were over for a day and they were coming back the next day. And after they left, I said to Jim, you know, I don't want to be confrontational. I knew he hated me to ask questions, but, you know, how are we going to get paid for this, you know? And he said, you know, Ing, he said, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it. And he walked away. And in the morning, he woke me gently, and he said, at about 4 in the morning, he said, Ing, I just want to sing you a new song I wrote. And he sang, I'll Have to Say I Love You in a song. And that's how that song was written.
Wow. I love that story. That is...
Thank you.
Wow. Jim is, and you could speak just as much as anyone about this, of course, but Jim is so missed, and I can't imagine what else he would have been able to do with his music and everything if he was alive today.
No question.
Yeah. How did you actually find out about the plane crash and the passing of Jim? Where were you actually at?
Well, actually, I was asleep. My stepmother had seen the Today Show, and she contacted me and said, called me in the middle of the night. It was about 4 in the morning, and I was having this dream where I was feeling really scared in my dream because I was trying to get in touch with Jim. I was sitting at my potter's wheel. I was a potter at the time, and I couldn't imagine why I couldn't reach Jim, but I needed to reach him, and I couldn't. And the phone rang, and it woke me, and it was my mother, and she said, my stepmom, and she said to me, you know, have you heard the news? And I went, no, what happened? She said, a plane crashed. And I said to her, and Jim, is Jim dead? I mean, I was just like waking up from this dream. And she said, yes. And I said, and is everybody on the plane gone too? Is Mari gone too? And she said, everyone's gone. And it was just so hard to imagine, you know, just having seen him and been with him that weekend before this happened. You know, it was such a good time that we had together. We talked and, you know, it was such a good time. It was so hard to even imagine that this was going on.
Right.
You know, that he was gone. So it took a long time for me to really believe it. It really did.
And I can imagine it did, and that's just I can't even imagine how you felt in that moment. I mean, even though it's been 40 years since it happened, I mean, I just
almost 39 years. Actually, it's 39 years this next year that Jim will have been gone, and then the following year it'll be 40 years. So we're close to 40 years right now. AJ was two. Adrian James was two when he. When his dad died, it was a week before he turned two, and we were so looking forward to having a birthday party at the house. And Jim was only supposed to be gone for 1 week, and he was coming home to celebrate AJ's birthday, and it just never happened, you know. So it was really sad, really, really sad.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ingrid, one of the many things that I love about this book is that you share so many intimate details about your time with Jim, and what was it like for you to relive all these memories? And after almost, like you said, nearly 40 years, what was it like reliving all this for you and writing this book with your current husband, Jimmy Rock?
Well, you know, it's very interesting that you asked that question because, honestly, the book was written 25 years ago. I had been having people contact me to write a book, and I would tell them the story, and they would come back with their own story, but not my story. And I had met my husband, Jimmy Rock, and he kept hearing these people who would come in, and, you know, I would tell them my story, and then they'd come back, and they'd say, well, what is, you know, they'd say, you know, this wasn't my story. They would just come back and say each time it would be something different. So I asked my fiancé at the time if he would consider writing this book with me. And he was an attorney at the time, and I said, you know, you'd probably have to leave your law practice. And he said, John, I'll be glad to leave my law practice and do this. But honestly, he took it extremely seriously. He knew that fans and, you know, he knew that people wanted this story, but he also knew that it had to be done properly. And so we traveled and met with people all across the country, all the many family members and friends and other fellow musicians. And we really did the best we could to research everything we could. And, you know, you never get 100% right, but you do your best. And 4.5 years later, we brought it back to the publisher at the time, and he said, you know, this is not the story that I was hoping for. I was hoping for something that was more about the songs and the music. And we said, you know what? That's fine. We're just going to, you know, give you back the money that you gave us for the advance, and we'll just take this book and we'll put it out another time. And so we went back to this book about 1.5 years ago, and that's when we decided it was time to put this book out. We had really gathered a lot of experience over the years listening to a lot of his fans and the people that, you know, that really just trusted me to tell me their stories, really. And like your story, you know, there's so many stories about whether it was, you know, how Jim's music affected people, whether they were, you know, parents were going through a divorce and kids were listening to these songs, or I was in Vietnam at the time and this got me through, and or even in Iraq at the time and this got me through. I mean, listening to people's stories, they wanted to know who this man was behind the songs. And I felt really honored to be able to do the best I could do to tell them the story of who Jim was. I really did my best. So, you know, when people read I Got a Name, the Jim Croce story, it's my hope that they will get a glimpse of who this man was. He was a terrific man. He was a kind and loving man. And in the last 2 years, he became somewhat of a different person, in the sense that you know, the fame and the travel. Fame didn't really change him. It was the demands on him that really, really made him into a person that he wasn't happy with. And in the end, he really got to become who he was and who he wanted to be. And sadly, that's when he died in the plane crash. So it was quite a journey. It was a hero's journey for sure.
I bet there are times that he felt like he was in a whirlwind, kind of tunnel vision almost, that everything going all at once. I imagine there were a lot of stressful times for him.
Oh, horribly stressful and lonely times. I mean, he was so lonely on the road. I mean, we had been together from the time I was 16 and he was just turning 20. We had been together, you know, really pretty much our whole teenage and adult lives. And when this happened, when he went on the road, and we kind of knew that there'd be some changes, and we were willing to take a chance and, get Jim out there to do his career so he could make music his career. And
right.
So it was so stressful for him and for us, you know, for AJ and me being at home alone. It was hard too. But, you know, I think that this is a wonderful story for people to read to understand how important every day of your life is. And, you know, before you get married and before you get a family, it's really important that you really make a decision as to what kind of a life you want and what kind of a career you want to follow. Because, you know, once you have kids, it's very hard to make those kind of decisions, you know.
Right.
It's going to just happen to you. And you've really got to decide how do you want to live your life. And that's so hard at 22, 23, 25, even 30. It's hard to decide how do you want to live your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you sometimes get into a situation where you're already burdened before you even know it, you know.
Right.
And I mean burdened in a sense, not as a negative, but burdened in a sense that you can't achieve a career in what you want to do if you have a family, you know, or if you have responsibilities so that you need to be able to make, you know, a living. It's very, very
right.
hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I can only imagine. And you know, I have to say, you know, in 1968, Jim was actually signed his first recording contract with Capitol Records, and I think you know you just covered the majority of it right there. But how did that deal work out, and how did it shape the rest of Jim's career and your life, even with AJ? Did y'all get a chance
at that time? That time AJ hadn't been born, and Jim and I signed that Capitol contract as a duo. So we
okay.
sang and we went out on the road, and that was some of the happiest times that I think we've ever had. I mean, in a sense, happy because we were out there at college concert circuits, and we were performing at colleges that, even though we weren't making money and, you know, we're trying to keep our heads above water to pay our bills, we were really reaching out to the public. The sad part was the Capitol record company hadn't put any records out, and so we were traveling, going to the colleges, but there weren't records in the record stores to purchase. So we'd go places, and there was nothing to buy. So it was really tough. And then Capitol was not in a great place at the time, and you know, music was changing a lot. The whole taste for music was not so much folk music or, you know, folk pop music. It was really getting into other kinds of music. You know, from the Beatles to, you know, oh gosh, all kinds of songs that were coming out that were more of a pop nature or a rock and roll nature, you know. But music was music back then. I mean, people played all kinds of music on stations, and there was everything from jazz to rock and roll on one station. It wasn't like things were as separated as they are right now.
Right.
You could play any kind.
Right, absolutely. Now I actually read somewhere that you actually sing yourself. So did you ever get up there on stage with Jim?
Oh, all the time. We were a duo. We were a duo from 1966 to 1971. Jim and I played as a duo. So I was on stage all the time. And we wrote together and sang together. And then when I got pregnant with AJ, we decided that I would stay home and Jim would go on the road so that he could have his own career. And my dream was to become an artist, which I'm getting back to finally. After
right.
all these years, I'm finally getting to do my own art. But I really wasn't ready to become a musician. That wasn't my dream. That was Jim's dream, and I wanted him to be able to do it. And so once Adrian James was born, it was my opportunity to say, okay, Jim, let's, you know, you go on the road, go do what you really want to do, and I'll stay home and I'll take care of our son and our home, and you know, we'll be together when we can. And so it was really a very clear decision that it was time for Jim to go do his thing. He had a talent that was needing to be out there, and I really wanted his music to be heard.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And, you know, one of Jim's biggest hits that he had, Bad, Bad Leroy Brown, is one of my favorites as well. It turns out that Leroy Brown, I don't know if a lot of people know this, it turns out that Leroy Brown was actually a real person. Can you tell us who he was and why Jim decided to write a song about him?
Sure. Well, Bad Leroy Brown, Jim was in the Army National Guard. And as soon as we got married, really just a week before we got married, he found out that he had to fulfill his basic training. So they sent him down to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, a week after we were married. And he had a sergeant that was down there. And he said that he always knew Leroy Brown was somebody that he had met, and he decided that when he was looking, hold on one second.
Okay, sure.
So he decided that he needed to, for some reason that's not going off. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, uh-huh.
Okay, I'm trying to get this thing off. Okay, hold on one second. I'm going to have to go get a phone off the hook right now so I can...
Okay.
Hold on one sec.
Sure.
Okay, so anyway, let me start all over again if I can.
Absolutely.
So what happened was Jim was in the National Guard, and he had to fulfill his basic training right after we got married. So he went down to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and he became a lineman. He said he was in communications, and they made him a lineman. And while he was there, he had this sergeant. His name was Leroy Brown. And he was a guy that was in charge of Jim's platoon, and he was a pretty angry guy. But one day, he just said, I can't do this anymore, and he left. He left the base and decided he was just simply not going to do this any longer. And so the only problem was that when he made that decision, he also recognized he didn't have any money. And so he came back the following week to pick up his paycheck, which was not a good idea. And they put him into the stockade. And Jim said that, you know, when he got out of the stockade, he recognized that this guy was something really special. And he said that, after getting out, he said, the way he put it in quotes is, after getting out of the cage, Leroy just turned into this completely different person. I mean, he was probably writing books or something, or giving lectures on some corner. But I used to just listen to him talk, and he was so bad. He was so bad that I just knew that someday I would write a song about it. And so he did. And that's how that song was written.
Wow. Now, did you say that you actually got to meet him yourself?
No, I never met. In fact, I've said that, you know, every year we get at least one person that comes in and tells me that they're the original Leroy Brown. And I have no idea who the real Leroy Brown is, but every year I can expect that someone will be coming in and tell me that they are the one, you know. So it's really fun. Whenever somebody says, "Hey, the guy that's Leroy Brown is sitting on table 21. Go talk to him." I'll go over and I'll talk with him, and you know he's convinced he's the Leroy Brown that Jim was writing about. You know, so it's kind of fun. You never know.
Right.
It's really funny.
So no one ever tries to prove it with pictures or anything like that, do they?
Oh no, I've never seen any pictures. No,
really?
I've not seen any pictures. But I do have pictures of Jim in Fort Jackson and Fort Dix when he went to do his second basic training, because he wasn't very good with authority.
Really?
So he ended up doing a second basic training in Fort Dix. So that was kind of fun, too. That was interesting. Anyway, Leroy Brown came about in the song, and I think he did a real good job of making him a very famous person.
You're exactly right. I think he did as well. After so many years of Jim being gone, you can still turn on the radio every day and hear his songs being played. Every time I walk into a business, this particular business where I live, I hear the radio all the time. And, most of the time when I walk in there, just like as soon as I walk in, I hear one of his songs. How does it make you feel after so many years to still hear his music being played? And how would you like the world to remember Jim?
Well, I would, first of all, how do I feel? I feel fabulous. I mean, I am so happy every time I hear Jim's music that there's no way to express how important it is to both AJ and me, AJ Croce and me, our son, that mm-hmm. his music continues to be played, because, we feel so strongly about Jim's music, as you do and a lot of other people do, that it's extraordinary music. It's music that makes us feel good about who we are and about, what we do. As, we can be rich or poor or whatever, but, there's a grace in Jim's music that I think is extremely important. There's a humility in Jim's music that is just so heartfelt that
right.
I don't think that anybody could take his place, really. He's got a lot. He's taught us a lot through his music. And he was a great musicologist. He was a great teacher. He had an amazing repertoire. And no matter what, I think that I'd like to see Jim remembered as the most as a wonderful storyteller, as a beautiful songwriter, and as a terrific human being. I've never met one any better.
Yeah. And I honestly believe that's the way Jim is remembered today. And I must say, you mentioned AJ, the son you and Jim had together. By the way, I want to say this: AJ is an amazing guy. He's a terrific guy. We had him on. I don't think I told you this. We actually had him on our show a year ago.
Oh, really? I'm so glad to hear that.
We did. We had him on our show, and he is such a great individual, so respectful and everything. And he's following in Jim's footsteps by being a singer-songwriter, and I love his music as well. And you must be so proud that everything he's doing.
I'm very proud of him, and he's on his ninth CD right now. So if people haven't heard AJ's music, he started out as a piano player. And he plays, but then he started playing guitar, and he's equally as good on guitar as maybe not quite as good on guitar as he is on piano, because on piano he is beyond amazing. And if you get a chance to see him anywhere on the road, I know he's traveling right now, you should definitely go see AJ. He's absolutely an amazing performer. So his music's great, and he is, I am so proud of him. I really, really am.
I know you are, and I can't wait. I hope he comes to Georgia real soon. I would love to meet him, and we're going to hopefully have him back on the show real soon. And like I said, he was
and
so great.
You should have him sing Walking Back to Georgia, because he can do that song.
Walking Back to Georgia?
Yeah, that's one of Jim's songs.
All right. I will.
Walking Back to Georgia. You should have him do one of those songs, really. A lot of people ask about, why did Jim write that song? And it was interesting, because Georgia On My Mind was out during that time with Ray Charles, and AJ performed with Ray Charles. So it was really interesting, because this particular song, Walking Back to Georgia, is a song that, that a lot of people would say, well, why did Jim write that song? But part of the reason he wrote it is he liked the word. But also, when he went out and he was listening to music, he always used to listen to all kinds of, blues artists and folk artists and jazz artists, and he really loved Ray Charles. And there was a time when AJ, and I were working together and trying to put together the DVD that we ultimately completed. And it was really interesting because we listened to a lot of old cassettes and reel-to-reels of Jim's. And it was so neat when Jim would write a song and we would write a song together. You know, he would listen to different songs, you know, sometimes other songs that he would sing, or he'd go into a song he had sung by another artist, and then he'd just, you know, he'd end up singing or writing something like Walking Back to Georgia, which was written actually, it was sung by Ray Charles, but it was actually written in the 30s by Hoagy Carmichael. It was a big hit for Hoagy. And it's really interesting because, you know, it's a totally different song. It's a derivative kind of feel. It has a totally different melody. But you get a feel of that song, Walking Back to Georgia, when you think of the Georgia on my mind. You go, okay, this is another song about Georgia, but it's a different feel. It's a different time. It's a different message. You know, but it still has that feeling of Georgia. So I hope you get to listen to that song because it's a beautiful song.
I promise you, whenever I see him, I'm going to put him on the spot and make him sing that song.
I hope he can do it for you. But if you can't, just listen to the song because I think you'll really enjoy it, and I think people in Georgia will like it too.
Absolutely. I'm definitely going to listen to that. I recommend everyone to pick up this book. I got to name The Jim Croce Story. I have it myself. I absolutely love the book. Please, everyone, check that out. And you can find it on your website as well, right? Croces.com.
Absolutely. And I'd be happy to personalize it for anyone out there. So if you just go to Croces.com, I'd be glad to send it a personalized copy and sign it for you. And it'd be my pleasure, especially for the holiday. It's great timing.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be amazing. Now, I know Croces.com as well as, do you have Facebook and Twitter as well?
Yes, we do. We do, and you'll see it right on, if you go to Croces.com, you'll see our Facebook and our Twitter.
Awesome. Mrs. Ingrid Croce, I want to have you back on the show very soon. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and, you know, I have another new book that I've written. It's called Photographs and Memories, and it's all of the recipes and stories from Croce's restaurant. So maybe we can talk about that next time.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Okay, terrific. Well, thanks so much for having me here. And you have to come and visit us someday, promise.
Okay, I will.
Someday you have to come visit us. And I'll come visit you sometime, too, in Georgia.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Have a good day. It's my pleasure. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was the lovely Mrs. Ingrid Croce, the wife of late singer-songwriter Jim Croce. Such a pleasure to have her on. I've wanted to have her on for so long now. I know we just played this song, but I want to play it again. If you're just now joining us, please re-listen to about 5 minutes into the show and listen to what Ingrid said about this song, I Have to Say I Love You in a Song, how Jim wrote that song to her. This is I Have to Say I Love You by Jim Croce.
Well, I know it's kind of late. I hope I didn't wake you, but what I've got to say can't wait. I know you'd understand. Every time I tried to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you in a song. Yeah, I know it's kind of strange. Every time I'm near you, I just run out of things to say. Understand. Every time I try didn't wake you, but there's something that I just gotta say. So you'd understand. Every time I tried to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you in a song.
And that was I Have to Say I Love You in a Song by Jim Croce. Everyone, I recommend picking up this book. I Gotta Name the Jim Croce Story. It's written by Ingrid Croce and her husband, Jimmy Rock. Like I said, Ingrid, of course, everyone knows, is the late wife of the amazing and talented singer-songwriter Jim Croce. I don't know if you can tell by my voice, but I was so excited to have her on. Jim Croce means a lot to me. I've listened to a lot of his music and his very soulful music, and it's meant a lot to me. I've really always respected his music. But everyone, please check out their website. Like I said, Croces.com, CROCES.com, as well as our website, thedrewshow.com. Also check us out on Facebook, /WAEJ The Drew Show. On Twitter, @DrewBTR. That's DrewBTR. Thank you again so much, everyone, for joining us. We have some great shows coming up. I don't want to mention anything quite yet. Thanks so much to Chuck Tyler for calling in. I haven't talked to this guy in over a year, and been trying to connect with him for quite a while and find out what happened to him. Hadn't talked to him in a long time, but it was such a pleasure him calling in and all that. But again, thank you all so much. Good night. Try to stay warm. Bye-bye.